This is The Strategist, episode 1298. My name is Zane Belcher. With me, as always, Corey Hogan, Stephen Carter. Guys, I was worried we were not going to be recording anymore, that the band was breaking up, but you can't break these guys up. You can't break
too. We were really quite divided over the new slogan for the city of Calgary.
Yeah, there's some anger issues.
Calgary.
Some
hate. I like it.
Nope.
Because I'm not a hater. Stephen Carter doesn't like it. He likes one of the other ideas that was on the table early that I don't like.
Yeah.
Because I have taste. Not because I'm
Our listeners in, because this is as much as this is a this is as much as this is a
they're not up to speed. I'm not gonna hold their hands.
Fuck them, man.
I'm not doing emotional labor for these fucking idiots that listen
to this
podcast.
Who are these guys?
These fucking clowns.
Hi, it's good to talk to you all again. It's been a while.
Yeah, it's been a while.
We appreciate that.
No,
we do.
No, I don't.
We missed you.
This is really a burden for me. Here's what I've realized. Probably get the same amount of money if we record an episode or not. We should take an entire month off and see if anyone complains. And if they do, we'll record less than that.
So we like recorded, but our last couple of episodes have been Patreon exclusive. We've just, you know, when times got tight, we said, are we going to talk to the people who don't pay us or the people who pay us? And we made our choice.
The people who paid us paid, came out on top. What a shock.
Carter, you know, Blue Sky City.
Blue Sky.
Blue Skies.
That's the
wait a minute.
The new brand for
City. It's Blue Sky City. I thought it was Blues Guy City. That's why I was so excited.
I'm sorry. What do you mean? We're saying the same thing.
Yeah, Blue Sky City.
Blues Guy City.
Blue Sky City.
Blues Guy City.
Blue Sky City. Blue Sky.
Blues Guy.
Okay, break down the words elementally, Carter. Go ahead. Okay. Help Corey with this.
Blues.
Yeah.
Guy. City.
Yeah.
Right? That's what it is.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's named after the blues can in Inglewood.
And yet,
blues?
Zane just...
I'm pretty sure...
Zane just said, Blue Sky City.
Is that what he said?
Yes, that is correct. Yeah.
That's not correct, Zane. No, it's Blue Sky City.
I happen to know I was the only one in the room for 2.5 hours. So, you two both jammed. I offered you guys free tickets. And,
that was the biggest tease of all time. That was a very long tease. Did they end with Blue Sky City?
They did.
No,
they kept us sitting there for... Yeah, they kept us sitting there.
A while.
Yeah.
But it's okay, because at the end we got the chestnut.
So let's look at now. Now I want to do some emotional labor, because we're losing the plot here. So Carter, what was the slogan of our city prior to today? Because we are all, of course, in Calgary. We're now under the blue sky, the heavenly blue skies that protect us.
Under the blue skies.
It's a political map analogy. It's a blue map, and there's a guy who's the blues guy. Blue Sky City, which is what we're under, protected by Blue Sky. Carter, what was it before, and what is the one that you actually liked? That's what I'm most interested in. Of course, Corey said there was something on the chopping block that you actually enjoyed more than what were at Blue Sky City.
It was a long list of things I enjoyed more. But this, we used to be called, it was Be Part of the Energy, is the old
or that
slogan.
It was Heart of the New West.
Yeah, Heart of the New West was before that. Didn't we have
Olympic
City?
I don't know what it was before that. Well, we had Howdy and Heidi, the Olympic.
Okay,
polar bear.
I'm not going to make this a segment, but can we actually talk about this for like fucking 5 seconds? Do any of these matter? Because Edmonton's has been the same for fucking forever. I don't think they've ever thought of changing it. Maybe that's just an Edmonton way of doing things. Never change Edmonton. But what do these even have any impact, Carter, to the brand of a city? Whatsoever.
Yeah, I mean, it is the brand. It's not just a slogan, right? Like a slogan is not
blue,
a brand.
Literally, we're calling it Blues Guy City.
Blues Guy City is something that we can live.
Which, by the way, experience. Do we own bluesguyscity.ca?
Oh, of course.
Oh, we do. Okay, we are wonderful. Yeah. Okay,
Blues Guy City.
They launched the Blues Guy City brand without getting the domain. That's on them.
That's not an us problem.
Problem. Wait, this is the only time you were proactive on this podcast by purchasing a domain in advance of me requesting it?
I think so. Okay, I'm pretty proud of myself.
I'm glad we own bluesguycity.ca. By the way, if it was going to be Blue Sky City, which it is not, just to be clear.
It is not.
Blue Sky City. Why not Blue Sky Country? I feel like that would be way better.
Because that's Montana.
Because it's a city.
Yeah.
I mean, I think those are two good reasons right
now. No, I don't think they are. Why would you narrow cast your city to be a city?
You're thinking of Big Sky Country, I think.
I am thinking of Big Sky Country, and I'm trying to fly Blue Sky Country, too.
Sorry, my brand's confused.
Yeah, Carter. We could be Blue Sky Country to their Big Sky Country, but instead, we're Blue Guy's City.
No, Blues Guy.
Sorry, Blues Guy. Yeah. Blues Clues Guy City. Okay, sorry. Yeah. Yeah.
Man, this whole kid has changed you. It's changed you.
Can I say, sometimes brands matter. Brands don't matter until they do. There are some brands that just have like incredible resonance and really tell the story of the city or just get adopted in ways that are strange and inexplicable, even when they're not particularly elegant or insightful. Like if I say Missouri, Missouri is the...
Show me state, isn't it?
Thank you. That's the show me state, yes. Right? I don't even know what that means, but I do know Missouri is the show me state.
I assume that they show their private parts quite a bit.
I don't think that's what it is.
You don't think so?
Yeah.
No.
What does show me state mean to you?
Well, I'm going to find out.
Big Apple, the Empire State. You know, sometimes these things at one point probably meant something, then they just become part of the brand, and then they're carried along forever. And I actually think Edmonton is somewhat close to that with the whole City of Champions, because they've had it for so long that it's just like, you can't change it now. Yeah. It would be...
You know what?
You know,
Edmonton
it's kind of like a building.
You know what? I've got an idea. Sorry. I know you're going through a whole thing, but I'm going to give Edmonton a tip, which I rarely do. Okay. Edmonton, here's what you need to do. Okay. You know what would annoy us more than City of Champions, which, by the way, annoys us a lot, is if you take Blue Sky Country, okay? If we end up being Blue Sky City, and you guys end up being Blue Sky Country, fucking that troll City of Champions.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. Corey, BlueSkyCountry.ca.
What I was about to say.
BlueSkyCountry.ca. Let's buy it, and let's forward it to the Edmonton.ca homepage. Let's do that.
Oh my God.
Okay.
It's good.
Yeah, how much money do we have left, Corey? Like, it can't be much.
Not a lot. Yeah. We do kind of. The problem with the domains thing is we never give them up. So we just kind of. That's a bill that increases every year,
every
episode that we go on. Can I say about these brands? Brands are a bit like buildings. They have to go through an age where they suck before they become classics. Right. And you know, this is true of any building. Any building you look at that you're like, that's a beautiful old building. There were 30 or 40 years where somebody said, what an eyesore. Why did they build buildings like that? We're going to tear it down. And that's true of brands, too. And you kind of have to power through the bad brands to get to the truly classic brands. The risk, though, is that sometimes they don't come out the other side and that building still looks like shit 60 years later, right? So cities do tend to change them up every 10 years or so and not actually get to that classic space because there's the fear that they're just going to carry this dead or damaged brand for way too long. And it is kind of a Calgary thing to be like every 10 years, we're going to do something new. It's part of why I like the Blues Guy City brand, right? And it's kind of an Edmonton thing not to change very much, which is part of why theirs sort of works for them too. There's my meta city brand analysis. That's there. Great. And also, Steven's wrong about not liking Blues Guy City.
It just is. I liked the Confluence brand more. That's all.
No, Confluence brand was bad. No, so one of the brands on the chopping room floor.
Yeah, it was a good brand.
Confluence.
You just didn't see
it. No one even knows what
the city.
It was more than just the Confluence. It wasn't just the Confluence.
Let's stop.
Hold on. My mind is blown. A city built where two rivers converge?
I've never heard of it.
We are the only city.
No other city has a fucking blue sky? Is that what you're saying? No other city has a blue sky?
Sorry,
how are you doing this?
You're
I'm
acting
not even
like
fucking
you're acting
you
like
guys.
My Jesus,
this is like children. It's like talking to children.
We're the only city with a blues guy.
I can't believe what's going on right now.
Amarjeet Sohi.
Let's move on to our next segment.
Things are tough in the polls right now, but if you become Blue Sky Country, Sohi, it's done. Oh. It's oh my God. He needs to run re-election on Blue Sky Country. Okay, BlueSkyCountry.ca, forwarded to Edmonton Mayor's website. Corey, we're going to make that happen. Let's move it on to our next segment. Well, maybe our first segment and maybe our only segment, Wong Song. That's right. Doug Wong and Christopher Freeland have done it. They have released a budget, perhaps their final budget, Stephen Carter. It is a budget that has a lot of spending. In fact, some of the spending we already had heard about in the pre-budget announcement. It has a lot of debt. It has a tax. Carter, I'll get into the details in a second, but I really care less about the facts and the numbers, and I'll give folks the numbers. I care more about what we call on the show the emotional truth. How did this budget, Stephen Carter, make you feel? From what you knew the political aims were, which was a elongated news cycle, an ownership of the news cycle, the Liberals perhaps succeeded in the first couple of weeks prior to the budget. Did they stick the landing with the budget, Stephen Carter?
You know, I think that the problem was that everything was foreshadowed, right? So everything being foreshadowed, sorry, Corey's playing with some sort of anal bead thing that's confusing the hell out of me right now.
Well, I don't know why it's confusing you.
Okay, well, I'm sorry about that. It's going to be difficult to concentrate. Here's the thing. I expected there to be some sort of, some sort of moment that really captured everybody's attention. You know, the housing thing unfolded last week. PharmaCare unfolded the week before. They were building up to something, and then it just didn't happen. There was no surprise on budget day that made it really unique or really sold us on the budget structure itself. So I kind of felt like a little bit let down by the budget and the emotion of, you know, this is a super important budget that we're all going to pay a lot of attention to. Well, when you pre-launch everything, then there's nothing left. There's no place to go.
Corey, I said I'd give you some of the highlights.
I think there was...
Let me give you some of the highlights and then let you jump in, if that's fair. You know, $52.9 billion more than planned over the next 5 years in spending. Looking at a $40 billion deficit this fiscal year. $8.5 billion on spending in new housing. I want to come back to that number because you in a previous episode talked about what an ambitious housing spend plan would be. And it wasn't 8.5, it was hundreds of billions when we talked about our Gen Z and millennial episode. We, of course, have the smaller stuff, but the niche stuff, right? The school food program, $1 billion, $500 million for youth mental health. And then, of course, the cost to service a growing national debt, about $2 billion more than it was projected just a few months ago, so to speak. And then, of course, we've got this capital gains tax, which we'll talk about in a second. Corey, those were the numbers, but I'm still going back to the same question for you. How did this make you feel as a political strategist, knowing what their plan was? They telegraphed it very aggressively through back channels, through leaks in terms of what they were trying to do, own the cycle. Did they stick the landing that was the budget?
I think this is a good example of what I have often said, which is never mistake action for direction. And I think this government mistook action for direction. They took a lot of action, but it would be hard to kind of see a common thread except for we're doing stuff, right? And ultimately, my feeling about this budget is it was a little bit of everything, but not enough to do anything. And certainly that's the headline for housing. For me, but not just housing. Like this continues a bit of a trend with the Liberals, including with the PharmaCare program. This budget was also including components of that, of course. That it was effectively, you know, we're gonna start and do a little bit of this thing, but we're not gonna do the whole thing. We're not gonna do the big version of the thing, and that's kind of hard for me to peg down. Like I can't decide where I feel that all lands on the ambition scale. But it does give a bit of a feeling to me, at least, and maybe you guys will disagree, of they started a lot of projects, but it doesn't really feel like they're going to conclude any.
Mm-hmm. So hold on, Carter. Do you agree with Corey that this was, you know, multiple files and not enough on each? Is that how you would read this? Because they're trying to spin this as maybe not that, but saying, listen, this is actually... maybe a Gen Z millennial budget. Maybe we were a bit prescient in terms of that discussion we had a couple of weeks ago, right? In terms of this is our core demo that we're trying to target this budget with. That this was a housing budget, another interpretation. Maybe the number wasn't as high as Corey wanted. Do you feel like this was a lot of files and not enough on each?
I mean, $500 million more on mental health is a drop in the Canadian healthcare budget. Like it is, you know, it sounds like a lot of money. It's just simply not. $1 billion for children being fed. You know, I'm for feeding children. I think we should do that. Corey, Zane, both of you have children. Take note. Please try to feed your children on a regular basis. But it doesn't really solve the problem. PharmaCare is the great example, and Corey brought this up. PharmaCare, you know, you've got two drugs being, or two illnesses, or two situations, right? For diabetes and contraception. Well, that's not a pharmacare program. That's a diabetes and contraception program.
Contraception program, yeah.
You know, so if you wanted to do a pharmacare program, you don't need to do it all in the first year. You could do, you know, something every 2 years in your five-year budget projections. It would have been very interesting to put some stuff up there that said, this is what we're going to do the year after the election. But instead, they did all these little things. So much of this stuff, I bet you we could have cut, Corey and I, because, you know, we're fairly talented, we would have been able to cut probably $10 billion in spending out of this year just by taking the half-ass programs out and saying, oh, okay, this is a half-ass program. It's not a real program, so we're going to take it out. And there's no constituency for it, for a lot of it. You know, like the transit spending is fine, right? We are trying to achieve things in the transit spending. But with the big housing initiatives, do we really need to do the smart home stuff? Do we really need to do the energy efficient pieces? You know, does that all need to happen when we're doing so much else in the housing space? And some people say, well, yeah, for climate change, we need to do all of that. Well, this isn't the fucking climate change budget, right? So you needed to take out some things in order to manage your spending and to be able to actually have some room to maneuver in your last budget, which will probably be next one.
Yeah, a great, great point about the climate initiatives and incentives there too, and how there's more money is being spent. Because I think even some of the people this budget would have otherwise spoken to, they're going to get to certain pieces and go, well, fucking of course, right? And so like some of those people who have drifted from the Liberals are going to react a little bit harshly to some of this stuff, because it reinforces some of the concerns people have about the Liberals in terms of, you know, they're not focusing on the core things. Everything's about climate, all of that. And you can make the argument. I'm willing to entertain arguments that it's not bad governance to go and do things incrementally. But that's not really what this was it?
No.
This was starting things, starting whole new things rather than incremental improvements to the things that we already have. And I will say, it's not just on the goodies. It's also on some of the things that they said that they were going to do in order to kind of take action on kind of the fiscal side, for example. Like the capital gain stuff, not going to materially change our fiscal situation, right? It's designed to look like a big wealth tax, but not really. It's going to get accountants busy in certain areas, not really going to change a lot of that there. Similarly, the cutting the size of the public service by the number, I think it was 5,000 or something. This is the federal government. It's a pretty big government. Not really. And like through attrition, gonna take some time, right? And I guess that something that really triggered for me as Carter was speaking is I would describe this budget with three words. Sounds like action.
Yeah.
I'm not convinced it is action.
Does it feel like action? Because sounds like action has a nice ring to it. But I guess I asked you guys for the feeling, right? And at the end of the day, we talk about politics as being like, this is why I use that term emotional truth with a bit of irony. Corey, does it feel like action to you, though? Like, and do you feel like the Liberals may have done enough, despite the fact that we're adding quite a bit of analysis to our answers? Do you feel like they may have done enough to, like, affect the emotional mood or the sense of action being directionally correct or enough to start chipping away at a very uphill battle that they need to start making gains on?
Well, let me say, I think this ties my two thoughts together here. I think that their communications and their pointy foreheads and their political strategists were kind of geared towards how do we make it feel like we're doing a bunch of things, probably things Pierre Poilievre wouldn't do, probably things that in isolation tested pretty well. And I feel that they probably spent too much time there in trying to make it sound and feel like action and not enough time trying to answer the question, what is the story all this action tells, right? And you can't mistake action for direction. And I do ultimately believe this is a somewhat directionless budget that was designed to feel like a lot of stuff going on. And that's a bit of a miss when you're 1 year out from an election and when you're down in the polls like this. Like, there's a certain amount of focus the fuck up that's required here. If you're not really going to solve any of these budget problems, why are you tinkering with some of this stuff that you are, right? If you're not really going to bring in some of these programs, why are you raising them just so that they'll disappoint people who fall kind of short on them? I don't know the number is $10 billion, but I do agree with Stephen. If you wanted to take a bit of a critical lens to it, and I think we have been here, what you would say is, this doesn't tell our story. This doesn't tell our story. That doesn't tell our story. We're not doing that well enough for it actually to be good for us. Let's hone those things out of it. Let's have ourselves a much tighter budget. And I actually believe it would be a better communications product too, because this is a bit of the kitchen sink approach to budgeting.
Carter, I want to come back to the capital gains and talk about it through the eye of whether it's actually an effective wedge against the conservatives, you know, trying to attack them on saying, oh, okay, well, if you want, you know, businesses to pay less, well, then that's just who you are. That's, you're already seeing some of that thinking. You're already kind of seeing some of the pre-scripted lines that the liberals had, assuming where the conservatives are going to go on the capital gains. I'll get to that in a second. But, you know, there was two pieces of political intel that I found fascinating coming out of the liberals that they wanted from this budget. Number one, they wanted a 60-day news cycle. From when they started their pre-announcements a couple of weeks ago to budget and going forward, they wanted a 60-day news cycle. They've told political media this actively on background, that this is their ambition. I want to discuss that. I want to talk about, was that even a realistic ambition? The strategy of letting that out, of like being like, this is what we want from it, I find that interesting. Secondly, and we rarely hear this from governments, but maybe this is because of the nature of where we are right now, that they were actually quite open, once again on background, with several political media outlets, Carter, around wanting a 5-point bump from this budget by June. Modest bump that they said, this is what we want. So before we dive back into this budget, can we talk about these tactics that kind of like were presented on background, but pretty much publicly? Like I on a couple of media outlets, I was asked about this a few different times, being like, oh, the liberals are saying they wanted people to know these two pieces of information. Carter, talk to me first about the strategy of laying this out, and then talk to me about the realistic possibility of both of those things occurring, 60-day news cycle and a 5-point bump by June. So let's talk about the strategies first of them leaking, talking on background about this, and then let's talk about the actual practicality. But Corey, same to you on that discussion.
Corey knows I'm a big fan of calling your shot, right? Like, there are some political times when you have to call your shot. And a 5-point bump in a 60-day media cycle, that to me just feels like calling your shot. And I do think that that also set up...
Why are you a fan of it, though? Walk me back. Why are you a fan of, like, the Owen Nolan goal? You know, if that reference means anything to you, right?
It means nothing to me.
Well, he'll point... it was like the point top left. This is where I'm going to go on you. I believe it was an All-Star game. And, like, I had a breakaway. And he's like, I'm literally putting it there, fucker. And he did. Like, literally puts it on the goalie top left sort of thing. Why are you a fan of that approach?
Well, first of all, I just... You know, I have a tremendous ego.
And showy.
Yeah, and I'm showy. And I think, but I also think that if you do those two things, right, then you've got the beginning of a narrative to say that it's turning around. We now control the narrative. We are in charge. You know, Pierre Poilievre has controlled the narrative for 388 days in a row, and we just broke that with a 60-day streak, right? We are crushing this. We're back on track. And the 5-point bump that we set for ourselves, that shows that, you know, that these Pierre Poilievre numbers are weak. We can chip away at them at our pleasure, right? We said 5 points, we got 6. Woo, we are fucking crushing it, right? That is an expectation set and an expectation delivered.
But
if you don't hit those, then what if the message is to the Prime Minister? What if the message isn't actually to the general population? What if the message is to the one guy who can make the decision about whether or not he stays or goes? What if he says, we got to make it 5 points? And everybody says, you know what? Let's tell the world. And if we tell the world and it helps us and we get the 5 points, great, good for us. We're on our track. But if we don't, we need change. We need change right now.
So
that to me is where that's the level of the game that we're playing at right now, in my mind.
You've got a grin. You've had a grin for the last minute and a half. Jump in, because I feel like you've got a lot to say on this particular topic.
I love what Stephen. I'm so distracted by what Stephen said at the end there. That's super interesting. The idea that maybe people even know the downside risk. So what I was going to talk about is like, yeah, if you call your shot an air ball, you look like a fucking fool, right? Yeah. We've all seen that guy on the court. But and that's a real risk. You're talking about a 5-point bump by June. I've seen nothing that suggests they can move numbers in that truncated of a time frame outside of an election. Just full stop, right? But if the whole thinking is we don't do 5 by June, it's not working anyways, and then we really got to change things up. Fuck, that's a fascinating idea. Stephen Carter, you have blown my mind.
But I win the podcast? Right,
no, but
you won the podcast tonight. Congratulations.
I'll get to the 60.
Congratulations. I'm really proud of
Carter,
you. This is good.
It was the 1997 All-Star Game. Owen Nolan called a shot. Carter, here's the thing. Let's talk about the 60-day media cycle in a second, because I find that fascinating. Yeah. I feel like that's such a bubble strategy. I don't even know if it has any value, but you guys will tell me. I won't tell you. Let's talk about the 5 points. Are you talking about someone going off book? Like off book? No.
That's not what he's talking about. It's brilliant. It was a brilliant insight by Stephen Carter. Can people please just note this?
Yeah, keep going.
Oh, yeah. It's the one time
celebrated upon it, annually. It seems like the only person currently appreciating it right now is Corey.
Well, and the listeners. The listeners are getting it.
They're not.
It's a little
they're not.
A little over your head, but
they're
okay.
Not. They're not. They're literally creating blue sky country paraphernalia right now, there ready to elect Amarjeet Sohi again as mayor of Edmonton forever. That's what they're doing right now.
There's one guy who can make the choice to step out and enable the Liberal Party to move past the challenges that they've got. He hasn't stepped out to this point. We've talked about, well, we need a cabinet. What we needed was a cabinet shuffle. Cabinet shuffle is going to move the
last
numbers.
Summer. Yep.
Didn't move the numbers, right? Well, what I need is a budget. If I have the right budget, then it's going to move the numbers. Okay, sir, what numbers do you think we can move on this budget? Well, I think we can move 7 points, 5 points, 5 points, 5 points, maybe down for five. I think we
five. Seven, and you sandbag it to five.
Yeah, so let's pull it back because I'm pretty comfortable we can get there. So let's talk about five. And let's call our shot.
I know you're doing a bit of like a one-man monologue here, but take me deeper. Like, you think this is actually a conversation that may have happened?
No, hold on. Zane, we got
to
stop everything.
Yeah, what do we have to do?
And I want you to explain to me what a two-man monologue is before we go.
A two-man monologue, let me tell you something. It's someone that has a split personality disorder who is speaking on stage.
Listen, I don't like to brag, but I actually did a two-man monologue in university.
Fuck you, and, Corey Hogan. That's exactly right. Carter, tell this.
All I had was entrances and exits during another guy's speech. And the guy lost track of where he was in the speech, and I wound up having... No, it wasn't me. I was the guy who was giving the speech. Anyways, it was a gong show.
Sounds like...
Gong show.
Kind of like this anecdote, yeah? Keep going.
Okay, so here's the thing. This is, you have to serve the party as much as you serve the leader, right? And I think that this is where the Liberals are trying to get to, is they're trying to serve the party and the leader. And the leader is saying, listen, we gotta show something. We got to achieve something. And everybody's like, yeah, we got to achieve something. What is it we're going to achieve? And how do we do that? We do that by controlling a 60-day narrative. And if we do a 60-day narrative, what is our reasonable outcome? And what's our required outcome if we're actually going to have this man remain the leader of our country? Well, the required outcome probably is a 5-point bounce. Because a 5-point bounce puts us back into election hustle, and we can do it over an election. We've got an efficient vote. We've got the ability to do these types of things. We've done it before. Let's put ourselves back in the game with a 5-point bump. So I think that that's actually how this has unfolded. They've sat down. They pre-gamed before Christmas. This is what we actually need to do. We're going to tell people that this is what we're going to need to do, because if we do it, then all the fucking gossip, all the fucking moments are gone, right? The trying to undermine the leader, it's over. Everybody knows that this is what we said we were going to do. This is what we did. And therefore, everybody has to sit down and shut the fuck up. And if we don't do it, well, we're fucked.
It's over anyways.
It's over anyways. So we may as well, you know, call your shot. And if you miss the shot, it's the end of the game.
I think that's incredible. And so can I tell you, just sort of expanding?
You can, but before that, I need to tell you something. A two-man monologue is when one person delivers a monologue through another person. And the example on monologueblogger.com, I'm actually reading directly from the site, is when Doug Wong delivers the budget through Christopher Freeland. Okay, so that is that is the example that they have provided.
That's a pretty good example.
Well, I stand corrected.
Yeah, no problem at all.
That's fine. Okay. Look, there may be a combination of internal pressures, internal angst, anything, and they come to this conclusion, we either do this or we're not fucking doing it, right? And so we're out on that ledge and we go big or we go home. This is where the saying basically comes from. This notion that it's going to take a swing, and if you whiff, well, it's over anyways, right? And I actually think what Stephen has said, and when I think about this now, and I don't want to overstate it, it could also just be gross incompetence, let's face it, yeah, where they think that this is fine. But
when you say, like, think just leaking this on background.
When they say, like, yeah, we're talking about 5 points and all of that.
Like, right? It may not be as calculated as we're talking about here.
But let's assume it is calculated, sure, for a minute. Well, then I think it is really fucking interesting because it basically tells us a lot about what's going on in the party in some way, shape, or form, where they feel like they need to make a statement.
Give me
like
beyond
that,
interesting.
And they're willing to fail on
smart or interesting. Like, is it? Do you like it strategically, or you just find it fascinating?
Fascinating, because I think if that were the case, that tells us that he is much closer to dead as a political leader than perhaps, you know, people are talking about generally. Like, if there was the sense that either A, you need this, or B, he feels he needs this, his career is that much closer to over than we think, because it basically says there's sort of an acceptance of fate here. Like, we're either able to do this or we're not, and we're going to move on. And so I find that fucking fascinating. But like I said, let's not rule out incompetence. It's also possible that it's just, yeah, well, we'll just tell people this, and then they'll think that we're political geniuses, and then we'll go out and we'll do our 60-day thing, and dude, by saying it, we, you know, we're going to manifest it.
How many times have I told you not to do my voice?
Yeah, that's a terrible...
How many times have I told you that?
Terrible Broadhurst that you're doing there. That's not how Benchit sounds. Carter, here's a question for you. Have you had experience with, like, this particular strategy on background, leaking the calling your shot, or on background, like, letting people know here's what we want to do? And tell me the difference between quantitative, which is what both of these actually are, 60-day media cycle, 5 points. The reason I remember it is because they're both quantitative, versus room for error, qualitative, right? Mission accomplished. It's your own banner that you get to put up whenever you feel like it, your own goalposts you get to move. Talk to me about this. Have you had experience with it? What does it look like for you? And then what's the difference between quantitative and qualitative? And, you know, if we are going down the path that this was a strategic call, then the room for error here, because it is quantitative, well, it's negligent. There's no room for error, is there?
No, there's not. And this is why I'm thinking it's an actual strategy. And the places that we've seen it are in leadership reviews. Jason Kenney tells us what the number is that he's going to stay, right? Allison Redford tells us what the number is that she's going to stay.
Well, those two examples should give the Trudeau people pause, but keep going, please.
But these are the examples of, you know, if I get this, then I will stay. And I think even Mulcair did it. And I am listing off a series of people that did not win, but the overall idea of it was, if I tell people what the number's going to be, if I tell people what the expectation is, then I've used the anchoring effect, and I've managed to set myself with a number that I can actually achieve. And I don't have to worry about, everybody else setting a number for me that is unachievable or outside of my ability.
Jump in, Hogan, I've got a question on the back end of that.
Yeah. But that's like, so if that's your strategy, which is a little different than what we talked about before, you pick 5 points. That's a big jump, man. That's a big jump.
That may be what is required to keep the wolves at bay.
Well, I'm actually going exactly where Carter was going, which is, rather than the question being phrased, to go back to Carter's one-person monologue, hey, Prime Minister, how much can this budget do us for? You say 7, sandbags at 5, versus, hey, Prime Minister, this budget's going to have to get us 5, right? It's dictated to you. It's almost negotiated in that sense, being like, if it doesn't get us 5, right? Like, this is the world.
There's no path.
There's exactly. If it doesn't in 60 days or 75 days get us 5, there's no path. I know we're going into quasi-conspiratorial state because, like, we're going down the path that this is strategic. But this is interesting, right? Like, in that sense, there is a world where this number was not chosen, it was dictated. And I think that opens up a very different sort of, like, strategic pathway in terms of what we might see next and how hard the liberals try to wedge on some of the things they think are wedges, so to speak.
Yeah. I mean, I think that this is where we are, is that this is being dictated. I don't know who by. I would probably actually say if it's being dictated by anybody, it's probably being dictated by the Prime Minister himself.
I was going to say, like, it might be kind of internally dictated.
Because you're looking at your numbers and you're like, man, I don't want to lose. Right? I don't want to be the one who
I don't want to lose that badly.
I don't want to lose to fucking Pierre Poilievre. Right? Like, I think that that's where he's going to be. I think that this is an internal thing from the Prime Minister. If my scenario, you know, which I've drawn up on the back of a napkin here, is even close to correct.
So hold on. Carter, I'm going to give you the same ability to answer the question I asked Corey. He thinks this is interesting, fascinating, if this is indeed strategic. Do you think it's smart? Like, I want to get you on the record on, do you think it's a good strategy?
I think it is, because I think that there are, we've talked before about, you know, the unofficial starting gun that went off when Rachel Notley was kind of a dead person walking in the leadership. We've seen elements of that, traces of that in the Trudeau world, right? We see people campaigning without campaigning, showing up at everything, you know, showing up at every microphone. And there's a number of people who are doing it. So I suspect that the Prime Minister does not need or want any more additional pressure on what does my political future look like if I'm still 20 points down after releasing the budget that I wanted, because this isn't necessarily the budget that the street was asking for.
And there's so many fascinating implications in terms of like what this means, right? Like if this number is publicly known and if what we're suggesting here is a version of the truth, then you're going to look at like leadership candidates. You're looking at ministers trying to crawl for space. You're looking at everyone checking their watches, being addicted to the polls. Carter, will anything be able to get done? Or Corey, maybe I'll start with you on this one. Will anything be able to get done in the liberal side of things? Like, will people actually wanting to be pushing forward to get these 5 points, helping the PM get the five, or is everyone's individual or, you know, secondary agenda going to kick into high gear when they know that this is something so explicit, so quantitative put out there, so to speak? Like, talk about the team dynamics, sort of thing, and speculate about the team dynamics, I guess is the right way to
phrase. I'll go even a little bit beyond team dynamics and just say, like, leadership realities here. I think maybe that would be a consideration and a concern even a year ago. We're way too close now.
Like, people already started.
The Liberals are almost no. Actually, the opposite. The Liberals are almost certainly going to lose the next election. If you are a serious leadership contender, are you actually looking forward to vacating the seat and taking it now and going down with this particular ship? I think a lot of the most serious leadership contenders at this moment, again, my answer would have been different a year ago. They're just like, you know what? Justin can run it into the next election for us here, right? And so I do think some of the dynamics change the closer you get to an election like this. And when a certain fatalism sets in, you got to keep in mind they've been down on the polls for long enough that they are kind of acknowledging it too, I'm sure. You know, in their dream diaries and in the places where they talk in hushed tones. But here's what's going to happen if they don't get the 5 points. This is a prediction I have for you. Well, I have two predictions. Yeah, I don't think they'll get 5 points. Although maybe they'll find the one outlier poll and declare victory, but I don't think on aggregate they're going to get 5 points.
And we're happy to start a polling company to do that for the PM.
To be that outlier.
Absolutely,
no problem. For the right amount of money.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, no problem.
Blue sky country polling.
Either the staff will be gone because they were incompetent and they put this out. And I mean, like, some senior staff. I mean, some serious staffing ramifications where people say this didn't work. They said it needed to happen. It didn't happen. There have to be consequences. Or he's gone because he was the one who decided to do this. And it was everything that Stephen just said. So either way, I think like a lack of 5 points at this point would be a big fucking deal. I do.
Carter, and Corey's opened up something, and let's just open up another bracket before we close any of them. And I promise I will get back to the...
all the brackets.
Open them all.
Got to get back to Blue Sky Country.
At the top.
Blue Sky City.
Capital gains tax at some point we will discuss. We're so far away from it. Carter, make the case for me that if you're a liberal leadership hopeful, that you know what? You actually are looking forward to running in the next election. there's a school of thought that there is no good time. Even if you're running into the ground, you get to lead something. Make the case for me. If a Sean Fraser said, you know what, Carter, I think Polyev's going to take it, but fuck it, I think I kind of want to do it. You know, make the case for him that, you know what, Corey might be right. That you know, conventional wisdom would say that let Trudeau run into the ground. Why would you get into this? Make the opposite case for me.
Well, there's a sense that Pierre Poilievre is a historically weak candidate. We can argue that until we're blue in the face.
I totally disagree. But keep
going. There's an argument to be made that either Pierre Poilievre is a historically weak candidate who's governing from or who's running from the right side of a party, and if you were to jolt things, that Pierre Poilievre would reduce in terms of his fundamentals and things would shift back. Jagmeet Singh is a historically weak leader for the NDP, which gives the Liberals more opportunity to pick off NDP votes and defeat the CPC. And there's also a case to be made that you don't want to be defined for too long. You don't want to sit in opposition in the government for 3 years, saddled with all the problems. You don't want to be in a position where you get to articulate all the various solutions. You want to be elected leader by November 30th of 2024 and presenting your first budget in March of 2025 and then going to the fucking polls on that budget. Right? Like, don't even vote on it. Just go to the polls. And that budget's going to be your victory budget. And they only know two things about you. You're the brand new Liberal leader, and you put forward an absolutely fucking stunning budget. That could be enough. You know, I think that could be enough.
I certainly think a lot of politicians can convince themselves it's enough.
And that's politics, baby.
Tell me the butt.
That's all we need.
What part of Carter's story here do you buy the most and do you buy the least, actually?
I guess the part I buy the most is that somebody thinks they can do it. I also think there's another piece that didn't really come up, but is another reason why somebody might do it. And it actually, I'll use Sean Fraser as an example here. He's going to lose his fucking seat in this next election. Like, he might not have a chance to be a leadership candidate at all if things are where they are in the polls. And this might be his one and only best chance.
That's an interesting
point. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so there is a kind of a cast of leadership candidates that are on marginal seats. And by the way, what is a marginal seat has become a very big thing. I would argue that Sean Fraser might not even be in a marginal seat. He might just be in a seat they're going to lose.
Yeah.
But I think that will feed some of it as well. So that I buy that. But, you know, where I have some skepticism is if you are somebody who, let's just say, you know, and a lot of the chat around Chrystia Freeland has somewhat quieted down, in my opinion. Oh, yeah. But like, if you're Chrystia Freeland, you are in a seat that the Liberals are anticipated to be able to hold, I believe. I'd have to look at
some. I think so.
God, yeah. if you're not, what a disaster.
Shit, right? Like, if you're not winning where she's running. Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, then you start thinking, I don't want to be Kim Campbell. I don't want to go down with this bloody ship. If there's pieces to pick up after, I'll pick them up after, right? But I also, the thing that I sort of believe the least is that Pierre Poilievre is like a weak candidate. Let me tell you something. I'm going to give you three names right here. Pierre Poilievre, Ryan Jesperson, Corey Hogan. All went to Henry Wisewood Senior High School. Home of champions and warriors on Elbow Drive here in the Blues Guy City. Yeah, that's just strong pedigree right there. Strong.
Oh, that
pedigree.
Boy, when you saw it like that. A lead balloon. Jesus Christ.
I am very impressed. Well,
give that statement a resuscitation. Hey, Corey, question. Start me on this. Let's wrap up the 5 points, and we'll go to the 60-day news cycle, then we'll go to Capital Gains.
Okay.
Who will hold them accountable? When you have this sort of Liberal insider say, PMO insider say that they want 5 points from this by June, who holds these folks accountable? Do you think they'll hold themselves accountable? Like, talk to me about the dynamic. I think there's such interesting dynamics here, especially if this is a strategy to hold yourself accountable through the public domain. You know what I'm trying to say? Like, broadcasting that we're going to get here and then self-flagellating if you don't. Like, how does the accountability mechanism work for something like this?
Caucus will throw it in their fucking face and just really wreck them on it. And I think the cabinet as well, although the cabinet, if you're not a fool, was somewhat involved in this conversation along the way, and are accomplices for you here. But a lot of those MPs who are seeing kind of short futures ahead of them, they will be ruthless on this particular one. This is the kind of thing that for sure actually comes up in a caucus meeting. There are issues, and I think Stephen can speak to this, where caucus grumbles, and you know they're grumbling, and you know they're talking in the halls, and you know they're talking to each other, but it doesn't show up in a caucus meeting, right?
Yeah.
Because there's certain like decorum and considerations. And then there are issues where you're like, oh, fuck, this is going to come up at caucus. And there's going to be a lot of people on side with it. And I think that this is more in the latter. You're going to have that kind of situation.
Carter, this particular part of the conversation, I think, is true regardless of whether this was strategic or pure incompetence, this 5-point, right?
Yeah.
That accountability mechanism will happen now that it's in the public domain in some way. Talk to me about that. How do you think about that?
Well, I mean, I think of it just the way Corey described it. I mean, this is going to be, I mean, right now, 50% of the Liberal caucus is dead, right? They're not going to get, like, they're creating specialty plans for their own, holding onto their own seat, but knowing that it's not going to work out for that well for them. So if there's not, you know, and these are people who believe in Hail Marys, by the way. These are people who believe that a leadership change can change everything. So they're not just sitting back and saying, well, we're going to hope for the next time. Half of them aren't going to get a next time. And they need two more years. A bunch of them need more years in order to get their pensions, right? Like, this is a big fucking deal for a lot of people. This is their financial future. And they're just not going to sit back and allow it to be played with by a prime minister that said he could get, don't worry, I can get 5 points on this budget. And the caucus goes, okay, well, you better.
Yeah, that's interesting. Carter, we'll leave that conversation about 5 points. Corey, 60-day media cycle.
Mm-hmm.
Possible and worthwhile. Those are the only two thoughts I have. Is it actually ever possible? Standard budget news cycle, 48 hours. 60-day news cycle. End to end,
sure.
To be honest, this is kind of what they've been telegraphing. Possible, and even if it is, worthwhile?
Yeah, well, first ask yourself, what does it even fucking mean to have a 60-day news cycle on a budget? So we're going to talk about a different thing every day that may or may not be connected to an overall theme? Like, unless there's like super strong theming and it all reinforces the story you want to tell, it's like, okay, well, you're talking a lot. People are writing a lot about it.
One program to the next, one program to the next. Yeah.
But that's just going to, like, people are going to fucking forget. You know what I was thinking about here? A couple of days ago, even, I was praising the Liberals, saying, you know, really smart the way they were rolling out items before the budget, allowing them to get the space and breathe. I don't remember any of them. Like, I barely remember one of them, right? Like, that. Like, I don't fucking remember.
Well,
because
wait, let me jog your memory. If you want to rent, your credit score can now help you. Just so you know.
That's the one I kind of have to remember. Look, I mean, I'm exaggerating.
No, I know.
The point is, they're just stomping all over themselves. And I've suddenly become less convinced that it's even a good strategy, right? Because I think that all of a sudden, even the things that they thought were good things, we're not talking about today. And we tend to remember the last thing, not the first thing. And so I'll be curious to see how this all plays out. But again, I'll go back to, what does it even mean to have a 60-day media cycle? It means nothing if it's not in service of a story that people can walk away with and say, oh, I get it. I get the Liberals and I like that. And I just don't get, I don't think they're going to get that from this particular thing. There are things in the budget I quite like. There are. But there's just so much stuff that you can't help but sort of either be overwhelmed by the mass of it or be distracted by the small bits of it.
Carter, one of the things Corey and I both like are the halal mortgages. We're both into that. That's how we're going to start financing our lives going forward,
yeah.
Even beyond real estate.
I had a halal mortgage the other day. It was great.
I mean, quite a loophole, halal mortgages, I have to say.
Well, Islam is quite a loophole. Biggest. That's how we should start selling Islam. It is quite a loophole in many things. Yeah,
okay.
I mean,
you should see Christianity.
Okay, well, I don't know why I had to get so like political about it, Carter. It felt like there was
a bit
of a twang.
My bad.
Hey, Carter, 60-day media cycle, news cycle, possible and worth it? Same question.
I mean, first of all, I mean, Corey's trying to hit the home run. Yeah, the home run is to have 60 days where it's all in service of a singular point. Totally agree with Corey. That is That is the level that everybody should be trying to achieve. But even if you don't, if you're the ones talking for and setting the agenda for 60 days, you still set the agenda for 60 days and the other guy's not setting the agenda. Pierre Poilievre.
And you're saying even if it isn't cohesive or even if it isn't necessarily a winner every single day, just so I'm clear.
Pierre Poilievre has not set the agenda for the last 2 months. And I think that that's very impressive. Pierre is now in the response mode instead of the control mode. And that's the first time that we've seen this. Is it better that it services a single narrative? Absolutely. Corey is 100% right. And I do think there are loose threads around this because there's just so many things that they're trying to achieve with this singular budget. But I think that if they can control a 60-day news cycle, then that's great. But there's also some questions on what happens on day 61, right? Day 61, it's not like you can just stop trying to control. I mean, really, they've got to control the news cycle for the better part of a year and a half. That's what they really need to do if they're going to win this election. And they should be doing it with a comprehensive and cohesive idea of what the fucking story is. And we're not seeing that. We're not seeing the story being fully articulated. Corey's not wrong. But they are controlling the narrative. They have taken step one of the baby steps, but they're not there enough for the rest of the steps, for the rest of the story. As my good friend Paul Harvey, who I went to high school with,
you don't remember the name?
It wasn't Henry Wiser.
I don't. That's it was a long time ago.
Wasn't God, where Ryan Jesperson, Corey Hogan,
Churchill? Did you go to Churchill?
No, that's not right.
You look like a Churchill guy.
Guess where I went to high school?
No,
Churchill
Pearson is not the right answer. How dare you say Pearson? That's such a.
It's I said Churchill
Northeast. Like that just why would you say that? I would not go to Pearson. Hey,
James Fowler.
Okay, that's even more racist. Hey, Corey, Carter makes a good point.
There's some Calgary deep cuts in this
episode. I'm sorry.
I'm just going to say.
Blue Sky City. We don't call it Calgary.
Yeah, Blue Sky City. Yeah.
Could have been Blue Sky Country.
Listen.
Carter makes it actually a very compelling point, right?
I've heard that point. Control
is the point, just so you're clear.
Yeah, no. No, yeah, I get
I know
the
that
point.
It's not the point. It is the point. You just don't like it.
I don't. No, I actually think this is one of the most overrated and it's like sirens on an island, right? Look back to an Alberta in 2015, how the Alberta NDP approached it with like an issue of the day. They got the media talking about it every day. They were controlling the agenda every day. Nothing fucking landed because they kept moving from issue to issue to issue with this mad frenetic energy where nothing could actually stick in people's minds in this like extra distracted times we live in. So I think it is overrated. And this is a point of disagreement, I guess, between me and Steven here. I just simply don't believe there's a huge value in controlling the agenda like that. Unless it's actually in service of something. People mistake the means and the end on this one all of the time. And I don't think you need to win in June. I don't know if you knew that, but that's not when the election is unless something unexpected happens. And you've told your opponent you're going hard for 60 days. So all they need to do is wait for the fucking 61st and then they can move on with their bloody
literally
lives.
Literally what I then. Said. Literally what I said. Okay, and well, I was so much more fucking charitable to you. And no charity. None.
I think the allure of controlling the agenda is like, that's
tell you what, if they go up 5 points, then it will be worth it. Then they will have achieved their goal.
If they go up 5 points, I will personally apologize to Doug for criticizing his budget.
Doug did a lot of work on this budget. We know that's why he had to skip out on Carter. That time that Carter. Yeah.
You remember?
I do. Not.
Do you remember the starving children? That's some good stuff.
You mean your comment from earlier in the episode?
I'm sorry, what? Okay, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I feel bad, actually. Well, I would like
hey, Carter.
Apparently Zane doesn't. Yeah.
Fuck. Starving children in one ear, out the other. Hey, Carter.
Yeah.
Capital gains tax. The increase in it. Yes, of course, it's partially, and from a policy perspective, designed to help pay for shit that the Liberals are now adding to their agenda.
Okay.
But you can also see what they're trying to do. They're trying to make it a wedge. Is it a successful one? Does it have legs?
Well, you kind of took your own you took your own legs out when you really emphasized that it's 0.13% of the population. Right? No, you know, if you're going to try and create a wedge, then put in a wealth tax. Like, fucking make
that
it
was
going
to be my follow up. Would you have gone further on this? And would there have been political value to go further on this? If you wanted to fundamentally control the news cycle for 60 days, would you have gone as like dramatic?
Corey's
as a wealth tax.
Corey's done polling. I've done polling. Fuck the other guy. Fuck that guy. Polls super well. It may not be the best thing for the economy. It may not be the best thing in society, but fuck your buddy is a strategy that actually works. And this isn't fuck your buddy. This is kind of like, some people are going to have to pay more.
Okay.
Lost me at fuck your buddy polls well. I think there's a lot of code.
And then the sound effect. We're going to move.
Yeah. Corey, you agreed with a lot of it. Can you translate for what Carter was trying to say here?
I'm so like lost and concerned at this point with all of this. But
it's getting very late. My watch is turned off. I don't even know what time it is anymore.
I gave you the win of this episode pretty early, and you're making me really concerned about that.
After a certain time?
It gives me a bedtime warning and says it's bedtime, and then afterwards it turns itself off.
Okay, well, let's talk a bit about where I could not agree more. If you poll people on just personal income taxes, you know, variations year by year, but there's a general truism here, which is if you ask people, hey, would you be okay with raising income tax at X? As long as X is a dollar more than what they make, fucking sure. Okay, make those guys pay, right? People are very happy to make the next tax bracket shoulder all of the burden, right? Regardless of the tax bracket they're in, frankly. And so it's pretty easy for a political party to sit there and sort of calculate out what their particular coalition is going to think when you look at those demographics and how that plays into it. And yes, there are like people who are philosophically just always opposed to taxes. And yes, there are people in higher income who are philosophically just like very in favor of taxes. But by and large, this is a rule that you can pretty much set your watch to. A watch that would work if you're not Stephen Carter past bedtime. We heard, yeah, that was the rumor.
Yeah.
Listen, big nights in the Blue Sky City.
We're gonna move it. We're gonna move it to conclusion, Carter. I feel like you're fading. We're gonna move it to our lightning round. Stephen Carter. Yeah, here we go. Here we go. That's fine. Who cares about the listeners at this point? Carter, overrated, underrated, calling your shot.
Oh, it's underrated. I love it. I love that strategy. I always have. Corey's seen me call my shot. Yeah.
It's a very famous story.
No,
I
he
tell
calls
of
it
you.
In retrospect. Let's be clear. It happened
that
he
No, he told you. I think the difference is though, like that was a private conversation, not a public conversation.
Yeah, but I was
you didn't
saying
get a
the
megaphone.
Same shit to everybody I ran into.
But you didn't get a megaphone and blast it on the streets of the Blue Sky City, 9th Avenue in Inglewood at that Starbucks. You just said it to me.
Here's the thing.
Right?
What's the penalty?
I'm talking, by the way, for...
Yeah, we know.
Code for most
people.
That's
fine. You think that is the only thing that's code for most people this episode? This has been Center Street it's Dairy fine. Queen level. Don't go down the story. It's fine. Don't even fuck around with it. Hey, Carter, I have a follow-up question to you. Penalty for miscalling your own shot, minimal.
Oh, it's massive.
It's massive.
it's a very risky strategy. Yeah. If you do not get what you call, like you're going to be eating crow, or you're going to be looking for a new job.
Corey, overrated or underrated? I never got your take on it.
I think it is overrated. Massive style points, no question about it. People remember Babe Ruth. That's where it basically came from, right? But for every one person who pulls it off, there are nine people who look like clowns. And so I'm just more of a fundamentals guy. Just get it up by 5 points. Don't go tell everybody about it.
The guy who calls bank and airballs it. Corey, give the Liberals a grade. give the Liberals Chrystia Freeland, Justin Trudeau, Doug Wong a grade on the budget.
You should have gone to dinner with Stephen.
Yeah, Doug got screwed. Yeah.
Carter, sorry. What's the grade? What's the grade you give him?
Chrystia Freeland, I'm going to give her a A B minus for delivery. I'm going to give Justin Trudeau a D plus for being distracted, and I'm going to give Doug Wong a failing grade.
Doug gets an A. He's the
he's the architect, and Doug, he was the one who was listening.
No, wrong. Doug was the glue.
Doug's a glue guy. Doug's a locker room guy. You need a Doug there.
You need a Doug, but you need a Doug who pulls his weight.
Are we getting Doug fired?
We almost did once.
I don't want to make sympathy room on the podcast for someone just because they've lost their job, Carter. Okay, I'm not doing that.
Last time Corey and I had to do that, would
that's
we?
Why you would show up with you. Okay, not helpful. Not helpful. Carter, prediction.
Yeah.
Liberals, June, 5 points. Are they doing it?
No.
Corey, prediction. Liberals, 5 points. June. Are they doing it? It's just 5 points. The lead is massive. Anything could happen. Correlation could be causation. It is a lot. But are they doing it?
They'll find one poll, maybe two, out of the many, many pollsters will have it, and they'll declare victory. But if you look at the poll of polls, they will not do it.
We're going to leave it there. That is a wrap on episode 1298 of The Strategist. My name is Zane Velge. With me, as always, Corey Hogan, Stephen Carter, and we'll see you next time.
Just keeps on thirsting, but all he wants is that monthly nut. The scene is set. The times today.
Papers in hand are quite a display. Oh, the figures dance, the numbers sway. In Canada, it's budget day.
All eyes on me. Will taxes rise? With bated breath, we await the surprise.
For the ledger's truth, no one can shy. It's budget day, shall we laugh or cry?
Will they axe the tax?
Or fix housing? You can build your credit score by rent.
Oh, the figures dance, the numbers sway. In Canada, it's budget.
Check out my shoes, aren't they grand?
How does that help? I don't understand.
Will you make my life more affordable?
Oh my gosh!
Aren't you adorable?
Let's see it.
Nitron endorses Nahed. Rocky wants some kids fed. Gil asks for 20K, right? Two water saves a day. A public option. Sarah has a housing plan.
The leadership race is over. It's been always over since the net she entered.
The leadership race is over.
We know we should stop it, but the others won't.